call the meeting to order at 4:30. Start with a roll call.
Tim Overbuckley.
Present.
Ron Nisman. Ron Lauer.
Here.
Crystal Walter.
Here.
Diana Pagan. Arthur Kim.
Here.
Ryan Russell. Jennifer Cunningham. Abby Huff.
Here.
Okay, we'll go around the room since we have guests. If you could introduce yourself, and if you're here for an agenda item, just tell us what that is. You're here for the garage.
My name is Mose, and I want to build a new garage.
And Cindy?
Cindy Haddish with Save Sierra Heritage. Get a comment.
Okay, go ahead.
Save Sierra Heritage has a bus tour coming up tomorrow with Mark Stoper Hunter. It leaves from Arthur School. The bus leaves at 4:30 and again at 5:30. If anybody's interested in joining us, we'll tour historic schools that might be demolished.
Mm-hmm. What's the fee, Cindy?
It's $10 per person. If you're a member of Save Sierra Heritage, it's free.
Has everyone had a chance to look at the meeting minutes of last week? Are there any questions or changes that need to be made?
Motion to approve meeting minutes?
I'll second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Okay, we'll go right to action 3A, certificate of appropriateness, 1616 Grand Avenue Southeast, new garage construction. James, they'll tell us what's going on, and then you'll have a few minutes to talk if you'd like to add anything to it, and then we'll probably ask questions.
I just need to know what hoops that I have to jump through to build the garage.
Okay. Go ahead.
So if you remember, you approved the demo at the last meeting. So one of the concerns why it was tabled was questions about the pitch, I think, of the roof of the garage and how that matched or didn't match the house. So Mr. Mose's application, this would be a 28 by 30 garage. It's a little bit bigger than what's existing. So new garage materials of vinyl siding and asphalt shingles. And this, as you should remember, the house contributes to the 2nd and 3rd Avenue District and is individually eligible for the register. So in the red rectangle there, the house is on the east-west street there, and then you can see the alley where the garage is off of. Front of the house. And so from 3rd Avenue, you can see the garage there off the alley. And then here's the existing garage. That is the proposed new one. And so, you know, the issue being here that vinyl would not be appropriate, and the commission does have the leeway of depending on views from public roads. This is one of those odd ones because of the way the block is, that you can actually see it from 3rd Avenue. So, and I think at the last meeting, recommendation would be to do some sort of like smart LP siding or some sort of alternative that gave that wood look, just not the vinyl. So, I would say any questions that you have, you can ask Mr. Mose, and he can.
I told that contractor, I said, put down what you normally put for the, you know, on your application or whatever you want to call it. And I says, they might have to change the siding or whatever's on the roof. I don't know, but this is, you know, if you approve the shingles that's on his estimate, or the siding that's on his estimate, or the pitch of the roof, I can change all that. I have to find out what you will allow me to put on the side of my garage. You know, if the, I'm assuming it's a 412 pitch on the garage, the new one. And I don't know what the pitch is on that one, but if it needs to go up a couple inches, well, then we'll just have to. Like I say, I just need to find out what I have to do to make this work.
Right.
Mr. Mose, is that the original garage?
Huh?
Is that the original garage?
Yes. 1906, I think it was.
That garage, no, that garage is not the original garage. According, that garage is not the original garage according to the Sandport map.
Oh, well, I'm just going by what the city...
Yeah, it's not the original.
Whenever they build it, I have no idea. But I'm getting tired of knocking my mirrors off my truck. At $300 a pop.
And what's the siding of the current garage? What's the siding of the current
garage? I call it car siding. It's just wood that fits up inside. It's tongue and groove on one side. They just snap it together. And it's cheap. Back whenever they built the garage.
You're doing this just to get a larger garage? Is why you're building this to get a larger garage?
A little deeper, if you can see on that little thing I drew out there. The garage there now is I think it's 28 foot, or 20, yeah, 28 foot by 24 foot, and I just wanted to go up, and from the new garage to the house is 35 feet, so, you know, that's the closest house, and between the property line on the left, there's 5 feet after they build it, and there's 7 feet on the other side, and then the driveway is a little longer, because when I pull my truck in front of the old garage, my bumper hangs out into the alley, you know. So I think it's going from 18 foot to 22 foot, the driveway, you know, or up to the garage.
Typically with new construction like this, we try to make it, we don't want it to be carbon copy of the house because that's kind of a faux pas too. Can you pull up the front of the house? Typically we try to kind of emulate the front of the house. But with that said, I was the one that was worried about the pitch. But I never really saw a picture close up. Did we have that the last time with the garage?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I guess I wasn't paying attention. So since it's not the original garage and that almost looks like the same type of garage, it's a little less pitch. What is everyone's opinion? I mean, if we're taking down the original garage that was probably there.
Yes.
And it probably would have had a higher pitch. It probably would have had something like the porch overhang.
Well,
we don't know.
If you go with the porch thing, it's about the same pitch as with a pamphlet.
But it's not the original garage. It's already been changed out, so that gives us, I think, a little more flexibility as far as your pitch. As far as material you use, it's supposed to, by guidelines, match as closest to the house. So
yeah.
They probably wouldn't allow vinyl siding. But
well,
they,
that's,
but
that's
they do
what
have
I
lab.
Told him to put it down, because I didn't know what you required.
Are there any windows you're going to put in the house?
No windows.
No windows.
No window, one door. That just gives somebody in my neighborhood opportunities to come in, which they have before. I really don't even want another walk-through door, because they kicked that in twice.
And I imagine you're putting a metal door on?
Whatever the guy has on his estimate. I think, yeah, it might
so
be
normally
metal
allow
door.
Metal for security purposes in the past, I believe.
Yeah. And it would be, that wouldn't be visible. The pass-through doors,
yeah,
and the house
between
side
that
on.
Side. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so you wouldn't see it.
Does anyone have any concerns as far as the pitch?
No.
So basically, we're just down to the siding materials. So does anyone want to discuss that in further detail?
That was actually my question. And I guess it's more for the staff. What are the appropriate materials as long as it's looking the like acceptable or appropriate materials as far as long as it looks comparable?
Yeah. I know for the Habitat house that was built in the local district, the commission allowed LP smart siding, which is, it looks like wood, but it's a composite material.
Actually, it is wood, isn't it? But it's ground. It's what they do is they take. Now, it's not the same as the cement wood. Mm-hmm. We find that's not lasting as long as it breaks in the cold temperatures. But that LP siding is actually wood. It's just that it's ground up remnants of wood, and then it's actually stronger than wood because they put it together with glue. It's got a wood grain to it. I think we made, in that case, we had them use something that had a wood grain to it, as I recall, because I also have a smooth one. Okay. It's a little bit more than the vinyl, but it's also a lot more durable than the vinyl.
And we also mentioned that since he's in the local district, he could apply for the grant.
Correct. Mm-hmm. Correct.
So you could offset.
Are you aware of that, Mr. Mose?
Hmm? No, I.
Yeah. So let's say
the last time I asked about a grant, they just said, "Well, if you take that house and get a grant to do something to it, you got to do the whole house."
It's changed now.
Well, and that's my understanding at the time, and I'm going, well, it needs plumbing and heating and.
It's changed since then. The grant is for new construction as well, is it not?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah, so let's say your vinyl siding was going to cost you $12,000 and the wood siding is going to cost you $16,000. You can apply for a grant to make up that difference.
Oh,
and it used to be, depending on income, you'd have to pay it back, but now it's completely, it's a grant, so it's free. So there's money out there for you to use for this, and we encourage you.
I think great.
We have like $30,000 left, I think.
We've given out 3 grants, but we still have ample funding.
So I would say as soon as we pass or deny this, in this case I think it's probably going to pass, I would talk to these fine people as far as, because you might as well use the money that's there.
Fine.
It would help you out.
Sure.
Okay, so you could use wood siding or the LP siding. Do you have any other alternatives?
What was that other one?
I think we have allowed the
shakes. Is that what it was?
That was another menu fit kind of.
Yeah.
Yeah, there was another product that is, I don't know what to call it, engineered.
Yeah, there's engineered wood. But don't we have that, outlined in the guidelines? As part of the guidelines, do we have?
Well, the guidelines kind of recommend using the same materials as the house. And since the house has wood, we kind of recommend to the commission maybe consider allowing other materials other than wood that look like wood, just to allow some flexibility there.
So we don't have an appendix with material suggestions or anything like that. I'll be honest with you, I haven't looked at the back end of the.
We just went off of what happened with Habitat and what was recommended by the commission there, because that was a brand new constructed house and the LP.
We're also very, very careful on that one because it was our first new build in the historical district, so we really wanted to set the preference for future builds. Would you consider using an LP siding?
That's why he asked me when he gave me the estimate, what do you want for siding? And I says, put down what you normally use, because I don't know what you people will come up with.
Just be glad you're not putting a window in there.
I don't want any windows.
So do we have enough information for Mr. Mose to make a motion? Or would you like more discussion as far as materials?
Does the application itself anywhere, and I was looking for it, but does it say vinyl anywhere?
Yes.
This is the one that you find.
There it is. So do we need to, my question is, do we need to deny with a recommendation for LP, or can we approve pending?
It's approved with.
What are our options as far as.
So it would be approving with. If it's an LP smart siding with the condition. And then that would also go on the certificate of appropriateness that building services will have.
So what you would want to do is make a motion denying vinyl siding but allowing real wood LP siding.
I think that sounds fair to leave the property owner either, if you're fine with either of those, wood or LP, that way you can make a decision.
Whatever costs the most. The garage will be worth more than the house.
It's not hard to do anymore. Okay, so do I have a motion?
Go for it.
need a motion to approve, but can't use, I don't know.
What's the language we're using?
I would say,
Abby, do you want to do that?
An example would be.
I can do that.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Okay, I'll make a motion to approve the overall size and style of the garage with the exception of vinyl not being used, instead wood or LP siding.
I second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Okay, Mr. Moses, so now they will get together with you, they'll give you your permit, and I would encourage you again, it's just,
well, I, whatever, you know, okayed the permit to tear it down, but I wasn't going to do anything until I found out if the building department will even let me put up a new one.
So what will happen, we'll send something over to the building department, so they'll know that from this side of it, you know, you're going to be, the siding material will be one of two, the wood or the LP smart siding, and then you would just deal with them for the rest of it. Lauren is the one that administers the historic rehab program, so you can talk to her about, you know, what that grant would be, how much.
Yeah.
That.
It's fine.
Okay. Excellent. Thank you very much for taking the time.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And you're welcome to stay. You're welcome to stay and listen to us ramble, but
no, I have to go drink beer. Right.
I'm going with you.
Save a couple
for
night.
Us.
Okay, we'll move to action item 3B, section 106 review, 200 First Street Southeast, and antenna
co-location.
Okay, so this one is a little different, excuse me, than the one that we had previously, where they were basically removing and putting on ones of the same size. We also have a kind of less information about this as well. They're going to put antennas that, again, it's another penthouse on top of the Alliant building. If you go to the next one. So you can see the giant antenna on the Alliant Tower if you're on the street. That is not what this is, but there is a penthouse that is located, next one, that really is hard to see from the street. And you'll see three X's here that are the locations for the new ones.
I never knew there was a penthouse. Is someone living in the penthouse?
No, I don't know why they call it that. I think it's any room, any small room that's on top of like a larger building, they just call it a penthouse. But these would be located here, here, and here.
What year was this building built?
1971, I believe.
Yeah. So the one you can see is staying from the
yes.
ground?
And you can, that's towards the top, kind of a,
okay.
above the green X there. So that one's not being touched, and that's, and I don't know the height of that one, but I mean that one you can see when you're on the street.
Being an action item, what are you expecting from us?
So what we're looking for is any comments you have that, so it would be the commission giving a comment, to the consultant that's doing this work. Let me kind of pause and give you an example. So the last meeting, or two meetings ago, you gave comments about new antennas that were going to be placed in a building. The consultant got back to me and said they had talked to the installer, and you had made recommendations about painting. Mm-hmm. The antennas to match the building, they thought that wouldn't be an issue. You had recommendations about installing any brackets or that are put into mortar, mm-hmm. not actually, you know, into, they said they didn't think there'd be an issue with that. So that's kind of an example. Anything related to the aesthetic look of it, how it's installed.
I will mention, they did say in the report that these are so like far in that you really can't see them from the street at all.
That's good.
That was the one thing that, when I was looking through it, there wasn't any dimensions on the antenna. And yes, I understand they say that, but there wasn't much to make a decision on other than just say, take their word for it. And I think it's going to be awfully hard to have a visual impact because it's so far up. But that's the only thing that I found when I was reading through this. There wasn't any dimensional information.
Yeah, and unfortunately, there is not a requirement as to what they are required to share for that Section 106 review, because calling was just like, they're like, well, you know, that's what we have. It's like, oh, well, and I even said, well, it makes it kind of hard to provide comments. I mean, that's part of it is Section 106 says review and give comments. Well, if you can't give the comments because you don't have sufficient information or the quality of it, but.
My question is, this building's not even 50 years old, so it isn't a national registered historic area, correct?
It's near historic registered buildings.
So should we even be talking about this if it's not historical, it's not 50 years or older?
That might be the comment, is you have no comment.
Yeah.
I think the idea is like it could affect the viewshed of historic buildings.
Yeah, that was what they were talking about at the workshop this year, is to be more aware.
But in this case,
I don't think is this the tallest building in Cedar Rapids?
Right now it is, yes.
So, like, it's not really impeding any.
Right, yeah.
The building is probably impeding more than anything on top of it.
Yeah.
I would just say, as long as it's not four stories high, so it sticks four stories, and some of them are, and that they just use good taste in making it blend with the building would be my only concern.
That was my only comment, is to paint it, to make it match the building the best that they can. We don't want it sticking out like a sore thumb in case someone were to build a taller building next to it.
Do we have any type of idea of what they will actually look like?
No.
I'm picturing like clowns attached to the side of the building and like building a taller building next to it.
I would just, like I said, make a note that architecturally it blends with that here in the building, which was 1971. And that it wasn't unsightly high. I mean, some of those towers, I mean, even people's homes, CB, when they used to have CB towers, they used to be four or five stories high.
So it would be shorter than that giant one that's currently on there. I just don't know how much shorter.
Yeah. Would anyone like to add to that as far as architectural and height? So do we need to, we don't need to make a motion?
No, that's all you need. That's what we need, yep.
We'll move to action item 3C, demolition review, 606 Fifth Avenue, primary structure.
Okay, so this house is a two-story house built in 1890. It was included on the historic asset inventory list created by a subcommittee of the HPC. It was also surveyed in 2006 and was found not eligible for the National Register listing. And just for some context, this is kind of in the Med-Q area.
Kathy's Pies.
Yeah,
right.
It's right. Store, yeah.
It's the Cedar Rapids School.
A teacher. Yeah, teacher.
Yeah,
teacher. Teacher.
Yeah. Correct. So here's one photo of it. And then I kind of got two angles of it as well. So due to the survey finding it not eligible for National Register listing, staff is recommending immediate release for this application.
So why did the subcommittee put it on their watch list?
Yeah.
Can I ask that question?
So yes, do you remember whose list that was?
There were valid reasons. Can I speak to this?
Yeah.
I just flabbergasted that you would recommend immediate release when we worked on that list for months. And it's historic in the respect that it was 1890s, which it's the only frame house left in that block, I believe. There were just several reasons, and Mark said he spoke to you, so if you'd like to bring that up. I just feel like it's a slap in the face that the staff would recommend immediate release when it's on that list. What is the point of the list?
So the point of the list is to identify properties that there should be attention paid to them and some sort of outreach to them to see if they can be saved, and whatever that means is, or educating the property owner, finding out about what they plan on doing with that. But the other thing I would point out is there are the four criteria from the National Park Service that are in that giant spreadsheet of criteria of why people think this property is historic. So none of those were checked. And also we have the survey that says it doesn't meet any of those criteria.
What type of survey was it?
I think it was a reconnaissance.
So I guess I wouldn't look at it as a slap in the face, because there's, you know, 500 or 450 plus properties that we have that list, and now the members of that subcommittee and others can do outreach.
You can do outreach when you're recommending immediate release on a building that we just found out about. That
so
you're asking for a demolition.
I would also
do outreach on 500 buildings.
So I think,
so for the commission's sake, the subcommittee was asked to prioritize. And each member said these are the top, I don't remember how many, and then the group together narrowed that down to these are the properties we're going to focus on for the coming year, or maybe if, you know, another year if necessary. This was not one of those, and I would say just going off of, you know, we're going off of the information that's there. The commission can put a hold on it if they would like, up to 60 days. Our staff recommendation does not have to be, you know, followed by the commission. That's one of the reasons why they were appointed.
I talked to Mark about this. I forgot my phone, or lost my phone, so I can't read verbatim what he said, but he would like us to put a 60-day hold on this for criteria D. He wants to do more research. He's already started. It was the lavender of the lilac house. It's been several things. It's post-flood. It's been brought back since the flood. There's been lots of different businesses.
It's a men's boarding house.
Yeah, it has a lot of history, and he wants more time to research that history.
Okay. I know we had focused on, you know, pre-1900 in our asset list and stuff. I think we're going to have these kind of situations come up because there is a large number of buildings on the asset list, and we've just begun prioritizing to do outreach. But I was kind of surprised on this house that there wasn't, and again, I didn't do my normal digging, but I didn't, any, the Google search didn't come up real with a lot of hits on it. And I don't know if it's just always just kind of sit down there quietly.
Well, it's also a Mercy Hospital house, and the last one that they wanted to take down, we ended up moving, which was the Beaver House. We didn't move it, but it was the Beaver House. He believes, because of all that, this would be a great candidate to be moved, and there are vacant lots in this area, if I'm not mistaken, that it would not take a lot to move this two or three blocks, which was the other reason why he wanted to go hold to see if, through Safe CR. I know Friends, we don't do house moving, so that's not going to be an option for us, but we can throw the message out to people on the website, as I'm sure Cindy would too, on Safe CR, that this could be a candidate to be moved.
Do we know when Mercy acquired the house?
I do not.
Because I mean, that's a red flag. I mean, it's in the Med-Q district. Mercy owns it.
Mercy in the past, though, has been very, Mercy's different than the Med-Q. The Med-Q would be all the hospitals, the 55 block. Mercy Hospital's always been very good about it. In fact, with the Beaver House, they paid, they gave, I think, $12,000. They gave the expense of what it was going to cost to tear down towards the cost of moving it. So they've nice. Always been very, very good to work with. So it's different than the Med-Q, which is basically PCI, Mercy, St. Louis, in the 55 block area, other entities. Med-Q doesn't own this one. I believe Mercy Hospital does it from that
extent. Yeah.
Yes. And they are much better to work with. I'm not putting
Med-Q
that against PCI, but
entity.
What's
that?
I didn't know.
Yeah.
Med-Q's
the neighborhood, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Med-Q is, it's the, but it can the Schmidt property? District.
Yeah, there's a self-supporting municipal improvement district.
It's a downtown district.
Yes.
A Schmidt downtown, Schmidt Medical. It's a group of people.
Richie Jones, the building with me, was on it. He took himself off after a couple of years, but
Interesting. Now that we're getting closer and closer to frost and wintertime, is there an urgency to get the demolition done? I'm just curious as to whether this is something that, you know, they're just getting it now and in anticipation of a spring start, or, I mean...
We can follow up and find out if there is. But, I mean, that doesn't prevent the commission from putting...
We have to have an action today.
Yeah.
So my recommendation, and I don't think I can make the motion being the chair, is a 60-day hold for criteria D, more history.
I'll motion for a 60-day hold for...
I'll second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed?
But I would like to find out if there's an urgency, just because that would give us a better idea about whether it could be moved and stuff, too.
And Cindy, through friends, if you could...
We've already reached out to the developer who might be interested. Depends on if Percy is willing to allow it to be moved.
I again, like Ron said, I don't know what they need the property for, but like I said in the past, they have been very good to work with. So if we could find someone, can you reach out to them and see if we were, after we did the history research, if we could find someone interested in moving it, would they give us the time that it would take? I'm not holding it for that reason. I'm holding it for history criteria.
So we can check with them and see if they have any urgency, what their timeline is, and who the contact person would be, and then we can provide you the contact person. We can just email that out to the group.
Everyone comfortable?
Perfect.
Thank you. Okay, 4A, 1403, discussion item, 2nd Avenue Southeast update.
Okay, so at the last meeting, these two items were asked for updates. So this is right across from Commonwealth. There's, you know, history with what's going on with this house. So when I checked Monday,
can we pull it up?
Yeah.
It was currently not listed with a realtor. However, there is a sign in front of it, so it could be for sale by owner, but it is not with the, and I called the Cedar Rapids Area Association of Realtors. It's not, you know, listed with a registered realtor. That's all I know. You can go to Zillow, and there's about 20-plus photos that give you a really good idea of the condition of the property. Also of the old carriage house, too. There's some photos in interior. It's quite shocking, so I recommend.
Mark was here. I'm sorry.
If Mark I just was recommend here, you check it
the
out.
The carriage house is where they used to sell, and I'm sorry.
The cars when they did the racing.
Tickets. Yep. Fair. Something.
For the when there was a racetrack.
Mm-hmm. Yes, yeah, you're more privy than I am on that, but so it does have a lot of history. Is there any way we could reach out? This house has been redone several times in the last 20 years. Complete. In fact, I think they got a paint rehab. Two owners ago to paint it. Mm-hmm. There was a fire in the basement, it went up through the roof. Is there any way we could get the roof covered?
I mean, that's...
We can't do it, but is there someone...
The city, there is also a long history of the city working with, trying to get the property owner to do certain things because they've been cited and things like that, so...
We could just get a board put over the roof just so it's not, doesn't get...
I can follow up and see if there's, you know, what the latest is. Typically, these things take a long time because there's a period of time that's given to make the current, you know, to remedy the situation. And then if there's a violation of that, they can convince a judge to give them more time, and then they can come back. And even then, they don't necessarily have to do what the judge says. So it can be, I know there's other people in the community that are frustrated by it. It's frustrating for city staff, too, to go through all that and not have any, you know, outcome. So
and here's the
we can check and see what the
here's
latest
the problem is that I've been fighting for the 7 years I've been on this board is this is a perfect example. If this house goes unattended, I guarantee you it'll come before us as a death trap. Mm-hmm. I want to get ahead of that, okay? Because I even when I was the only one voting no, even when to do a demo because we had cops falling. We had a cop that fell three stories through terminated floor because it was a landlord and he wanted to tear it down and they wouldn't let him because it was a historical district. It's happened several times, so he just let it sit until it gets so decomposed. And then it comes before us as a death trap, so we have no choice. Or the city takes it down anyway because, so I really want to get ahead of this because this is a key structure to that neighborhood. So at the very least, we need to get the roof so it's not raining in there. Even if they give us the permission to get one of us to maybe have a bake sale to get a board to put on, I mean, we've got to get the water from going down inside of it.
And what, couldn't the owner apply for a grant?
I don't know who the owner is. It went back, didn't it, through foreclosure?
Well, it's, I think it's listed now as, it's E-I-R-E, it's like Air or Erie. It's the same person that owned it before under the name Dowledge, I think. So
and I think it was sold, I mean, don't quote me, I think it was sold on contract to another gentleman and he got angry with the city because of...
Well, I can clarify. He basically was doing things illegally.
Okay.
And he, there was a contract written up basically by a realtor with no experience. And so it was between the person wanting to sell it and the prospective buyer, it went back and forth and finally went to court. So I'm sure he said he blamed the city, but you know, he was living there when that wasn't allowed. And
I just know he kept calling me as a friend's phone number, and there wasn't much I could do to help him. So if we could just get in touch with the owner, that they could, I don't like to use the word mothball it, but secure it so it doesn't have any more disease spread.
So I'll leave this on the agenda for the next meeting for another update, and I'll check to see what the status is of any of the any citations or things like that.
And I have friends, okay, they're not friends. I have people I know, they're friends that have gone into this house. It's not even secure.
You can just walk in.
You can just walk in. So you're going to have vagrants.
And that's good to know, because that needs to be done, and then that's something where if it's not done, the city will go ahead and do it.
And they walked through it, they went in the basement, they looked at the whole, they walked through the whole house like a prospective buyer, because it's just sitting there open. Mm. It's going to end up burning down if someone doesn't.
If it is open, and that is in violation of the city, can the city come in and, board up the doors?
So I believe there's a process where they notify the property owner, mm-hmm. but at some point, and maybe it's done right away, yes, the city will come in, secure it, and then charge the property owner.
And the reason I ask is the hole in the roof considered an opening that someone could get through if they climbed up and into there?
That I don't know.
Okay.
And, you know, that's, again, there's this lengthy process because of property law rights that tend to drag on. And sometimes they do end up making the overall situation worse, but...
I just didn't know if we were boarding up windows and doors, if that would be considered an opening.
I can definitely
board it up that way.
Yep.
Any other questions?
Such a pretty house.
Yes.
Beautiful.
It's a really nice house.
Renovated, it would be gorgeous.
The guy that owned it with a woman, I can't remember her name, she was in her 90s, he has a house next to St. Paul's, Westercamp. The little white one right next to, is it St. Paul's? St. Mark's. St. Paul. What is the church out there?
St. Paul.
St. Paul.
Baptist Church.
The one that, and there's three of them there. We battled 4 years ago because they were going to tear all three of those down and we could save them. But he owned that, and I always thought the older lady, and I can't think of the name, I wish I could, owned it, but it's my understanding that he owned it with, this would be 3-4 owners ago. And it was really neat to go in. Ray Westercamp in the house next to St. Paul's had a full of very expensive movie memorabilia. Mm-hmm. I mean, stuff off sets and stuff. St. Paul's owns that church now, and I think they're using it for storage. But this house was interesting because she had stuffed dead animals, cats, and stuff going up the steps of her. I mean, it was, I never saw it myself, but I heard she was very eccentric. But it was really eccentric kind of in a neat way. So this one's a keeper. So it was gorgeous. Okay, we'll move to 4B, 400, or do we do that one? No, 400 3rd Avenue Southwest update.
Is that the bell?
It is. So this is, I forgot the name, not Trinity.
Salem, I think it was.
So there was a church, so this open green space to the left, they called it a sanctuary in the assessors, but there was a church there. after the flood, sometime between 2009 and 2011, due to flood damage, it was demolished. Kind of right where that little tree is, right there, is they saved the bell from that, and they put that, if you can go to the, yeah.
Kind of see it,
I
guess I can go
to
the street.
So this it was asked to an update on this because there is a for sale sign there, and yes, it is listed. If you have $329,000, GLD is listing this. It's a half acre site, so that they call it a school building, was built in 1950. That's in normal condition per the assessor, per the listing information, it's in really, really good shape. So that's really, that's all I had. We, the city, have not received any, inquiries or permits or, any requests for permits, or developers have not approached us. So, right now it's just,
what was Ron's concern?
What would happen with the bell, right?
Yeah. Well, yeah, we're just, yeah, I'm not really sure if it was, but I think it was just wanting to know what was going on because he saw that.
Oh, the for sale sign.
Yeah.
But we really had no control over what happens to the bell, yeah. Right? It's private property and it's not historic. Oh. I think the name of it, can you see that church from First Avenue?
No. So it's right on the other side of the block, Trinity, on the other side of the block, Steve Emerson has some row homes. You don't see them. I think you see them in the street view. So he's renovated that building. So there's row homes on the other side of the block, on the other side of the alley.
Okay. Well, there was another church on First Avenue that had that same flame and cross. It's gone now, too.
Is that the one by the interstate?
Salem.
Yeah, it's a Methodist.
Yeah. And it had the exact same cross with flame. And it's gone as well. Kind of by that tattoo shop. Wow.
So that was all I had for an update.
Okay. Do we just let Ron read that in the meetings, or could someone?
I can email
forward that on to him.
Yeah.
Okay. 5 future agenda items. I'm not sure what that is.
So.
I was just gonna say we added that as an opportunity to allow anyone to bring up future items.
Oh, add things for the next.
Yes.
Okay.
Exactly. Yep.
Does anyone have any items they would like discussed for future agenda items? That'll just be an ongoing thing. In
here. Yeah, okay. Just so we are reminded that that's a thing we can allow people to do.
Number 6, wood doors, an update to the CNME process. And I can only say it because I was reading it.
So if you remember, Jennifer Cunningham had noticed there was a house, I forget the address, but the owner had swapped out a wood door with recessed panels to a flat wood door, which is now following the guidelines. So we had a discussion about is there a way to, so first of all, wood doors, where you don't need a building permit to install those. That will not change. However, what was brought up is there a way to help identify the existing condition and then make sure what was approved is approved? And so the idea that was floated and that we're starting is prior to issuing a CNME, we will need a photograph of the existing condition. And so as an example, with its porch, door, windows, so we know what it is that's being requested. So if it was a door, we would like to see, not just a close-up of the door, but a little bit of the outside so we could see framework. If there was anything that was maybe ornamental that we would want to make sure we knew about, that we could say, okay, property owner, you can do this, but you have to make sure you keep that. And then afterwards, so that would be before even issuing the CNME, and then afterwards we would require a photograph, a picture, an image of the final product so we could verify that, yes, they did wood or whatever that is, door, window.
And I did push really hard in the meeting for permits, but I didn't succeed just because it's a big time. It
takes a lot of time, we don't allow it in any other places. My biggest thing was, I made the point to Councilmember Poe, Adam, and Jennifer that we rule on a window this big on the front of a house, but not on a door that's... So that's what we kind of came up with is, because I made the point to Adam and Jennifer and Ann that it's not just the door. You can take the door off, but sometimes the hinges are historical, the gingerbread around, and there's no way for us to know what they're taking off. So that's why it was Jennifer's idea to do the picture, so they have an idea, because it's like for like, but so they have an idea. Because my biggest concern was, okay, they're not going to change the frame until they get the door home and realize it's 3 inches too big. There's no way for Adam and city staff, Jennifer, Ann Poe, or any of us to know that they just changed it. They're going to require the picture before and after, and then I would suggest any of these CNME process, like for number 7, that they show us. Who sends that picture in? Do they send those in, or do you guys go get the picture?
No, the property owner, or whoever the applicant is.
My biggest concern was I wanted to make sure we get ahead of this so we have a little more control over doors. We've always voted for them in the past, but that's when they're doing a whole facade change. And it wouldn't hurt any of us, just like Cunningham, to watch for stuff. If you see anything shady or construction with no permit in the window.
So I'm confused. What's the difference between a permit and a CNME?
So the permit is, so there's a building permit issued by Building Services. That may be for, you know, most things getting into framework, you know, porches, windows, siding, roofs, those all require building permits, windows. The CNME, so that from the historic preservation standpoint, there's two permits that we give to a property owner. If they meet the guidelines, then staff issues a certificate of no material effect, or CNME. If they don't for some reason, then that then goes to the commission for a certificate of appropriateness.
Right.
And that kind of the appropriateness part is where it gives the commission leeway to say, well, you know, you can't see this part of the house, so we'll fine with that material or whatever that decision is. So when it doesn't meet the guidelines, then, you know, from as we get that request, then we send it to you guys for a certificate.
And the other thing, Jennifer,
it also does not. So the other thing, that if a COA or a CNME is issued, a building permit is still required if that's a normal process. So, you know, if Mr. Moe's to build a new garage, he's going to need a building permit. Your approval of materials does not guarantee him that. It just says from the historic preservation standpoint, he's good if he does one of two things. So that's kind of the difference.
The other thing that Jennifer was worried about was if a person agrees to do a like for like, because I asked if they could still come before us, especially for doors, and she said, but the problem with that is you're making them jump through hoops they shouldn't have to if they're going to do what the guidelines say they do. So she was afraid it would really impair us ever trying to get future historic districts. If people say, don't do it, you guys, because then they nitpick it. And I was a concern of hers, which I agreed with. Mm-hmm. I don't agree with it, but I also agree with it. But I don't agree from the standpoint that, same example that I used for my building. And I asked Jennifer and Adam and Ann this, if my whole facade of my building is the door, the peacock window, which is tiny little pieces of glass, and I don't need a permit to put a steel gray door on it, but I want. And I asked Jennifer, so what if I did that? And then they would come out and say, like we did for the one that Cunningham found. What's her name, Jennifer? But push come to shove, I said, okay, Jennifer, so I did it, and it's not right. And this is going to make you guys happy, but I said, what repercussions do we have? And basically, you can give them a push to put the right thing on there, but push come to shove, we have nothing. If I didn't want to take the grader off, I don't have to. I would lose my National Register listing.
because that's part of the architectural detail that makes my building historic. So there's some gray area in there, but we did the best we could do to still make it to where people would still want to do like for like materials and go through the CNME process.
Yeah, and the purpose of the CNME process is if you're, and you see this with other city processes, if you're meeting the guidelines, the rules, then staff can okay that.
Correct.
So it's a way to kind of streamline the overall process.
So there's, if someone is just changing their door, they still don't need to contact the city at all?
Well, what we've been trying to, with, you know, with kind of the advertising now for the local historic district, anyone who's in a district or has a local landmark, we encourage them, we let them know there are certain things that you may not need a building permit for, but you still need the review, the historic preservation review. So, you know, I think the only one I can think of is doors, is front doors.
They're still required to get a CNME, but there's no mechanism to make them come in. With a building permit, there's a whole process. You can get fined, you can, you know, there's people who are checking on that.
Even with things that require a permit, I guarantee you 40% of it's done without permits. I'm not here but myself. I'm not now because I sit on this board, so I got it. But I've done things to my building, most of them inside, which we don't govern. We only govern the outside. So I guess I really haven't done anything to the outside except storm windows. I did that long before it was on either the national or local. I probably would not be able to put storm windows on that building now. What would I do?
You could do storms.
They're in the guidelines.
Well, I can't do metal storms. Okay. Well, we had, when we bought the building, when Osage was bought by Richard and I, another 5-10 years very outside, it would have been a teardown. When you walked on the roof, water squirted out. There were weeds growing on it. It had the old farm window and screens that you had to take off seasonally, and they hung on those little hooks and latched with iron, what did they call it? And they were blowing out. We had glass flying out. We had the back part of the building, because of the way the building is a 6-foot grade from the front to the back. You don't notice it when you're on the roof because it's so long. I had ladies living in the back apartment because it was an out-of-state landlord. Well, we bought it from a friend who had it 2 years and died from a cancer. But there was no back to their apartment wall because the water would wick in, and it's outside brick, and then there's a ceramic tile-type brick, and then it's plastered, and the plaster was just sand on their floor. There was no running water in some bathrooms. I mean, it was really sad. It's taken us 30 years to, and now I got to start with windows but now we're going to look at repairing them versus replacing them because that's what they're really recommending now. But
smells brick is the hotness right now.
What's that?
Smells brick is the hotness right now.
It's not historically appropriate.
And what I would love to do on the back of our building, but I got other things that would be require the money first, is hire an artist to paint Austin Palmer's face on the back of the building. You've seen them probably where they do those art in the buildings. Technically, I think I could do that because that's paint, right?
What's the back of the building? Brick?
Brick. Painted brick.
It's already painted? Yeah. I mean, because I know there's recommendations that if it's already brick, if it's already painted, okay, but if it's not, there's usually recommendation not to paint brick.
Well, we're not going to do it anyway, but it would be fun because the parking ramp's right there, so everyone would see how sick Palmer was going to be looking deep. And the whole building would be his facade, but we're not going to do it. It's not cost productive. But anyway, so we all really worked hard to try to come up with a thing, and I was happy. I would still like to see stuff come before us, but it's not going to happen.
Just to be clear, though, when we get an application, and it's so that actually would have come to us, we would have had the discussion of, well, it needs to be recessed panel, and if they were to say no, then we would say, okay, now you need to, it's a COA.
Yes. And a prior picture that Adam will get will help immensely, because he'll be able to see if there's gingerbread around the door, if it's an antique, you know, some of those hinges are great big screwed-in hinges. He'll be able to say, you can change the door, but you can't change.
Gotcha. So, is there any ramifications if they switch a door out and they didn't get a CNME? Okay.
So that's the trouble question.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We've sent letters
A strongly worded letter.
Yeah.
So for all intents and purposes, the CNME and honestly a COA are non-enforceable, as opposed to a permit, which can be, like with fines and things like that.
So if they're, so windows, let's take windows. Someone goes ahead and they replace windows. Well, we had an example of this, the house right next, not right next to it, somewhere in the area that the last house we were talking about, where they, it was a rental and there's a fire escape ladder and I guess kids were kicking out one of the windows.
Oh, yeah.
So he resized it, not framing wise, but just did like wood and then a small window. Well, someone happened to notice that, so because you need a permit to do a window, he didn't get that. We had some leverage there,
but
to say.
But that's the permit that's enforceable,
right.
Yeah.
As opposed to,
yeah.
So the CNME and the COA in and of themselves are not enforceable, though. Only in that they're linked to the building permit.
Yeah.
You can try to apply pressure, but if
I wanted
to be like the guy on 3rd Avenue 19th,
I think that's part of our job to go out and talk to people and raise the awareness
and that's really scary, but education.
I think we need to understand that like we are doing this through hearts and minds rather than like fines and like legal enforceable.
So the building permits are for the entire Cedar Rapids area. The CNME and the COA are all just for local landmarks and local districts.
Which is why I was trying.
And that's why you're not going to be able to get an enforcement clause on that. So.
Yeah, and short of getting a permit, I think this is a great.
Yeah.
I do want to
really
know
best
general
do
about
a great
doors
step
because
to work
I would
with
think
all
for the same reasons of windows. There's other things that drive it besides the historical properties around door. I'm kind of surprised on that. But
now I did talk, we had a meeting on Monday with friends and my board's very upset because they worked very hard. We wrote that the chapter 18 and then we wrote the guidelines. And guidelines are very explicit on what you can and cannot do. And they're kind of being ignored because of this loophole. I know what you're saying, but I mean, if you go
if they're being ignored, they're being ignored by property owners who also ignore getting permits when they need to anyways.
Right.
And outside of, I mean, it's everywhere through the city. So
they're very frustrated because that was one of their biggest, we did miss back porches that I don't think we put in the guidelines. We never ran across it, so I know we've had a couple since then.
Yeah.
And there was something else we don't have on there. I can't remember what it was that we forgot.
We added in flat roofs.
Yeah.
That was a change.
And we've had a couple of porches that we put on the backs of houses. We never ran into that much because when we rewrote those, we went to Denver, Dubuque, Aurora, and one other city, asked if we could look at their guidelines. It's been a very long time. It took us a couple of years to do that. Going through page by page to all those guidelines, seeing what we could pull. Not the guidelines, the guidelines. No, the chapter 18, we didn't rewrite all that. We just made recommendations to change. What was the gentleman in Colorado?
I don't know. I wasn't involved with that.
It was a gentleman, I can't think of his name, but they do this, and he recommended that we update our chapter 18, because they were obsolete. So we did those first, but then the guidelines are supposed to aid in how to understand. And we have, if you go to the Friends website, you can click on any of this and it'll take you in verse for verse for all chapter 18, the guidelines, the names of things, you know, like a dictionary, what do you call that?
Glossary.
Glossary. So if you want to know what an A-frame was, click on it. It'll give you pictures and all that kind of stuff, descriptions. That's the best we can do at this point.
There was a question back where I ended up doing some research with the National Parks and the National Registry and so forth, and I could not find, and you guys may know something that I don't, but I couldn't find any example of a municipality or any kind of governmental organization that had a way to enforce the historical preservation guidelines nationally or anything. Again, it seems to be more of make people who want to follow or want historical preservation aware of what's going on, but we still don't have the
Savannah, people. Georgia, they find them.
Do
if they don't follow there, yeah. If
which,
they don't follow.
Which, so is it at a city level? Or
yeah,
is it
yeah, it's through the city.
Okay.
Their Historic Preservation Commission. If
something is done, they get, that
that's across Georgia, because, or just more?
No, just in Savannah, because Savannah. It's a national landmark.
I'll just, yeah, I'm curious, because I could not find anything. And of course, you know, there's a lot to look at, but that's, the thing we got in this whole discussion about how can a local government supersede, and and so on and so forth. And I did do some digging, but I'll look into Savannah. That's good to know. Thank you.
And I still encourage you, because I know Cindy, Bob, Amanda, and Jennifer.
I live on Beaver, but
I don't, but I go through there all the time. I would encourage you guys to drive through and look for anything that looks suspicious, and if it is, call Kevin or Adam, see if there's been a permit applied for it. We can get ahead of it before.
So as these buildings come online, as they get to be 50 years old, you know, we're not stuck in just time. So I was curious about vinyl siding. When will it become, you know, acceptable for buildings that are now 50 years old? And when did it come online? And when did it start to have market share? And it states in everything I could look through that the 70s and 80s is kind of where it got. And we're getting within a couple years of starting to see that. So how do we go about, so is that why we don't have lists of material? We just make it appropriate based on.
That might be interesting to call Paul on that.
I was just going to say that might be, that's probably worth staff getting a hold of Shipwell and asking that question, because you're right, at some point, that's the original material.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, glass block is the same way, and asbestos tile, like, it's all part of that.
Yeah.
But again, like for like material would probably fall into.
Right. So
if it was already on there, you can replace it, but if it's not on there, you wouldn't be able to. So
it's sometimes hard when you're a historic and looking backwards to look at the, you know, turn around and look the other way.
I made that point for some neighborhoods that didn't pass the drive, what do you call it, when you do a drive
reconnaissance survey?
Because I happen to think the 60s is some of the ugliest architecture in the world. But our great-great-grandkids are going to think it's the best thing since sliced bread, you know. I don't think, you know, I mean, except for the architect that, that's the guy that's well known for his, so, not Sullivan, you know.
Louis Sullivan?
Where are you going with this?
Well, there's some 60s that it's a well-known architect that did it that people drive all over the country to see his things. They're usually very 60s looking flat glass, you know. Is it Sullivan? No, it's not Sullivan.
I don't know.
Is it earlier than 60s?
Yeah, he was 40s and 50s.
Okay. But some of his looked like the 60s type work with the flat roofs and the glass and the pitches and stuff. But yeah, some of the stuff that we grew up with will be people sitting here talking about it. I'm really sad if you, this is just off the cuff. I'm really sad that the architect that's going up now around Cedar Rapids, it's all that Western style stuff that's going to be so dated so quickly.
Oh my gosh, I know.
Like snout houses.
What's that?
The snout houses.
Just, you know, I mean, the first one that went up I thought was kind of cool, but now it's overkill. Now they put one down on First Avenue by the Hy-Vee. It's probably, in my opinion, I think the architect's not here, is one of the ugliest buildings. And they tore down that beautiful house to do it, and they couldn't save, you know?
Yep.
They tried hard. All right, any more questions on that? Okay, Adam, number 7, certificate of no material effect updates.
Yes.
I can do better when it's written out.
Yeah. just in the past couple of days, we issued 2 CNMEs. These are both for historic rehab program projects, which I will present to you guys soon. One is at 205 Park Court Southeast. She is replacing a couple boards in the front and back porches, and also some of the fascia and soffit boards, and also doing some tuck pointing. So kind of a smaller project, kind of fixing up different areas of the house, but that was approved for a CNME. She's planning on using wood, and it'll be painted. So, and then the tuck pointing, they'll use like matching mortar. So, and then 1825 Blake Boulevard, this guy is just roofing the house using asphalt shingles. So. that's all we have for
our students. Do you have an estimate of how much money is left?
We have about, after the after funding these three, I think we'll have about like 11,000 left. So
good.
And that's,
1 to 2 more projects.
So we had already awarded the 1 year allocation. So this is actually 11,000 left of, due to payback of loans and some carryover of almost a 2 years worth in 1 year.
Yeah.
So.
So when we budget, then do we advocate for more than our normal year since we see that we can?
That's a good question. I mean, not. We'll kind of see how much this actually gets paid out because I get estimates and I, you know, budget off of estimates and those change sometimes or projects don't end up happening. So we might still have some rollover money too. So we'll just have to see how it plays out.
We've
given updates to the City Council Development Committee, so they're aware of the fact that, you know, that that because was this the first time with 50,000 or this the second year?
So FY 18 and 19 were combined into one because we actually had trouble spending money, and that's when we changed the program and eliminated the loans. So this is technically our second 50,000.
So I think just being able to show that that was not like, you know, that was an actual good amount and probably, you know, on the low end.
Some of that 50, well, not the original 50, but I believe you said when it first started, it was a loan program, like free interest loan. So we got it, built the kitty back up because people paid back the money they borrowed.
Right, which is the money we're spending out now.
Yeah, so we really were over 50.
Is this 11 through the end of the year, or is it through the end of the fiscal calendar?
So this is FY20 money.
Okay.
So the next funding cycle will be July 2020.
So this 11 goes through June?
Yes.
Correct.
Okay.
Yep. So we'll start collecting applications again this spring and awarding those, and then they can start their project July.
Awesome.
So we're asking for 100.
Maybe one day.
Where does the money come from?
So half of it is TIF, tax increment financing, and then the other half is from the, like, what's it called?
General
budget.
And this is before all you guys started, but we had made two cycles of members' recommendations to do this, but we didn't push it really hard. So a lot of this was the city's doing, coming up with this money, which is kind of nice. Okay, do I have anyone that wants to do number 8?
A motion to adjourn.
Second. I'll second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Go home. Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Adam, do you know or who I would talk to about, so my neighbor got evicted, and all the stuff got moved to the curb.
Oh, yeah.
How long that can stay there?
Probably so the safe CR.
Days.
Yeah, I don't want to.
I won't do that. I break the law and I put it in the storage garage.
Yeah, so
I don't want anyone.
I don't know if that's exactly
okay.
Right. I think, but my memory is that it's 30 days.
Okay.
Let me.
Thank you.
So what I'll do, Abby, tomorrow, I'll send an email to an individual, have you on the email, and just kind of do that little handoff.
Yeah.
But she is the manager of the SafeCR program.
What's her name?